there's a song called Coldplay, and I've been like horny for your thoughts all week. And so, sorry, actually, to be fair, Coldplay samples two. It samples two songs. It samples Yellow and Sudden Death, which is Quell Chris and Chris Keys. I don't even know who that is.
You'll get my opinions very shortly here.
Okay, cool. All right.
Especially, it was fun when I was listening to it for the first, like, I just did one listen through. I remember when I got to that, I just like paused it for a second. I go, because I didn't see that the title of the song. And I just heard the sample of Yellow at the beginning. I'm like, what? Did it like the album end? Or no, wait, this is still
surprise audio. Surprise audio face.
Surprise Pikachu face, and then you'll get my rest of my opinions.
That's another good shirt idea. Surprised audio face. And it's just like you doing Bam Eyes.
A caricature of me doing Bam Eyes.
Yeah, it has to be more like... No, it has to be you doing Pikachu face. Just like...
Surprise Pikachu face.
Surprise audio face. Okay.
It's a thing.
And then on the tag, we can put like 4 exclamation marks. It's just to get around that.
Extreme 4 chooks, not 3, 4 chooks.
Meanwhile, in court, 4 chooks, not 3, 4 chooks. Very different. 4.
Carl, there's 4 chooks, all right? Listen to me, man. Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I'm Dan.
And this is episode 236 of this fine established podcast. We are reviewing 3 albums. Albums? This week, we have Special by Lizzo. Might be covers album, might not. We report, you decide. And we have Gemini Rights by Steve Lacy, and then Beautopia by B2B. Second record for second LP from B2B, much anticipated. And
will Biba Doobie survive the curse of the second?
The dreaded, as Robin Pecknold says, I am glad I will never have to make a second album for the rest of my life.
Yes. Very interesting conversation on there. Interesting conversation all around, really. I think it was a really good week of music overall. We'll start with our singles. We're a little bit light this week. Also, we're a little bit light on news as well, but we have some doozies in the members portion, so join.syndicate23.co for that. But yes. Let's get started with our lone single of the week.
Yeah, we have Love You by Pascal the Landlord. It's from a little 14-minute like EP thing called Sketchbook, but it's the first track on there. And he has a couple different tracks produced by a bunch of different guys, but Love You is produced by Jay Dilla, which, you know, it's a guy that we absolutely love and adore here on Audio Face. But
one of the best producers in rap, for sure.
100%. Him, Kenny Beats, Madlib, bunch of others who are just fucking on their game all the time. But Love You is a fantastic track. It's nice, short. It's only maybe like a minute and a half long, right? 2 minutes at most. Like a lone soldier, long hauling, ending credits far from us. Donuts in the suburbs, it's been a slow semester, still a loose cannon. State to state, I move exits, I'm too reckless. Under pressure, got me stressing, hit the bench presses. Early morning, skip breakfast, give me propellers. Say it loud as jet engines, that I love you a lot. And I can't call it quits, I know I fake way too much. And my vibe is a mix, cause I never could focus for shit. Don't you get up and dip, all that potency, I need you right here. And it's just the flows, the beats, everything of it is just really, really good. I love it. Just flies out of the gate running and just doesn't stop until the track ends.
Yeah, you get a lot of really... Pascal the Landlord's rap style is very kind of old school. Call back to the greats while still sounding like pretty fresh. To me, and we're kind of joking about this on the before the podcast, Pascal the Landlord reminds us a lot of Bishop Nehru, who was this artist who came up basically kind of like with Doom's Blessing and released one project called Nehruvia. And a lot of those were like different productions. I think one of those used Mathematics, beat from that. One of those used some of the special herbs from MF Doom. And it's a very similar project where you're using some like really you know, off the beaten path, but still like very solid beats from producers like Madlib, J Dilla, etc. And you're really coming together on this project with just solid rap, solid flow. Is the like the flow is impeccable, truly here. Very little flaws in that. And so really excited to see what Pascal the Landlord comes up with next.
Yeah. For sure. I'm very excited for it. I pleasantly surprised. That's one of those things on Audioface that I love getting where I'm like, I have no idea what this is, and you listen to it and you're just like, give me more. I want it.
Yeah, Sean, you even did extra credit. You listened to the whole thing. I just said we were only going to do the single, yeah. But you just went to the whole thing. You're like, nah,
I just kept letting it play. I was like, let that shit play. I love it. Give me some more. Inject into my veins, please.
Yeah, do not touch that aux cord when Pascal the Landlord's playing. That's for sure.
Anyways, no.
Really quick new singles suggestion. Again, if you want to send us new singles to review, email us at audioface.syndicate23.co or reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram at audiofacepod. And on the members side or on the rest of Syndicate 23 Network, we still have that January 6th hearings with BAM coming up. It's already out. You can hear that. That was the round one. The hearings will probably do another recap of round two of the hearings because those have been wild. Trump calling one of the witnesses that are testifying witness tampering. So awesome. And yeah, remember to become a member, join.syndicate23.co. We have a Biba Doobie bonus that we did that is only available for Syndicate 23 members. We actually delve into the history of Biba Doobie and how like she sort of blew up from a TikTok remix kind of thing into really coming into her own production wise and building like really just like her own unique sound, which I believe she carries distinctly into her more recent work. More on that later. So tons of benefits with Syndicate 23 membership. Now's a great time to join. Join.syndicate23.co. And thank you, Peter, for mastering this episode. Dead Music Productions, deadmusic666 on Instagram to reach out to them and have them master your podcasting or music needs. So yes, check them out there. And oh yeah, our Untitled 2022 playlist. I'm going to even get rid of this note that says help us name it because it's there. Check it out. Links in the description. Let's go to albums.
Yeah, let's go. So first album review of the day, serving it up Gary's way, Bean, is Special by Lizzo. It is 12 songs, 35 minutes long. Lizzo, did we review her debut?
I'm almost certain we did. Yeah.
I'm like 90% sure we did. Yeah, because I Love You in 2019. Yeah, we reviewed that. Cool.
Yeah.
Lizzo burst onto the scene with Truth Hurts and a bunch of other tracks that came out a few years ago. And it's unapologetically herself, you know, has been through a lot of different stuff throughout her career and whatnot. And it continues to have to always answer for shit that she shouldn't have to. But granted, you get that as a female person of color in the fucking music industry. That's how it is. But with her second record, it's a take on kind of being more introspective, but also being more out there too in that way, which is interesting. It's kind of treading that fine line, but trying to still really be unapologetically herself throughout it. She has a ton of samples, which we'll get to in more in a minute of that. But with it being a shorter record, I actually didn't mind this too much with how it sounded. Her first record, I thought some tracks were fine and some tracks were just, it was a lot of filler on here. To me, it's one of her more complete works, but there's still lots of stuff left leaving me wanting and whatnot, especially within and rap, trap, neo-pop, everything. There's a lot of different sounds coming out that are not getting the attention and stuff compared to other bigger artists. And that's why we have this podcast, but
yeah, I will also say the original version of Cause I Love You was 33 minutes long. Of course, there was like the super deluxe version that was released afterwards because every artist has to do a deluxe version of their album.
I mean, always. Yeah.
Like Grass Grows, Birds Fly, Sunshine's deluxe albums, Forces of Nature. breaks. But with Special, I do like the length of it. I do like that you get, yeah, that duality of Lizzo. It's her, but it's in a deeper way, I think. And there's also some very interesting musical choices you get as you kind of go into here. So you get in
there's
songs
a lot of
there's
a lot of political messages and stuff in there too, which it's nice to hear her branch out a bit and some of her messaging. I think that could get washed out by some of the production, but more on that later.
Oh yeah, definitely, because I didn't even get a lot of the political inklings from my listening, so definitely bring that out. But starting with like The Sign and About Damn Time, you kind of get these, I don't want to quite want to say like Lizzo is like a show tunes artist per se, but she brings like quite a lot of like production panache, so to speak, with songs. Like About Damn Time has like trumpets in the background. Like it feels like a true entrance, like a coming. And that's like kind of what, that's kind of really what Lizzo is about. Like being very unapologetically like herself and not really caring about what people think about that, and that's like really admirable.
Mm-hmm. It starts off like the sign About Damn Time girls, and it's just like those are your twerk songs, as I like to call them. They're just certified freak songs of just going in full gas, just have fun, let it go. And they're fine, like tracks by themselves and whatnot, like. The sign, it's actually like that little kind of, you know, upbeat show tune-ish theme with that. About Damn Time, you know, it's you know, the nice thing, like neo-pop is, Dan like to say, funk is back. It has a lot of funk influences and stuff too. And it's nice little groove pop song for it. Girls, which, you know, samples the Beastie Boys song. And that was interesting for it. I was like, okay, that's a choice, but all right. So
yeah, it was a song that was also a little bit of controversy that we reported on because of the original version of the song's use of the phrase spaz, which a lot of people in Lizzo's community said, like, hey, this is a little bit insensitive towards people with disabilities specifically, like who have like these spastic reactions. So that lyric was changed for the single. It's changed in here. I forget exactly what it is. It's like a very small thing, but it kind of just shows that like in certain ways... Yeah, she's like, she says, hold me back instead of that now. When she says, hold me back, I'm about to knock somebody out. It's very innocuous. Like, I really didn't, I was trying to.
Doesn't change the song.
Yeah, I was trying to find it and look for it, and I really didn't find it, which kind of goes to show here. Like, this was, for all the people who say, cancel culture, look at this. When an artist goes, okay, yeah, I messed up. I'm going to, like, fix my mess up and try to, like, own up to it. People more or less were fine. Like, if people were still mad at Lizzo, they were like very clearly like looking unhinged in that case, because this is a case of an artist just like mending up for their mistake, and that it's fine afterwards. So it just makes a lot of like the whole bitching about not just cancel culture, not make this an accidental power report segment, but like these complaints from other artists who are like, and musicians very often, who are like, oh, I can't express myself musically. I can't say what I think with my emotions or my thoughts or whatever because of like everyone wanting to censor things. Like, it's so overblown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, and as I said earlier, like, it didn't change the song, it doesn't change the album or anything, that little thing. Again, I was looking for it as well, and I was like, okay, don't see anything with that. Towards the middle of it, you know, To Be Loved, it's more of that, like, I'm trying to think of a good comparison of a sound that I was thinking of that. But, you know, just decent pop song, I Love You Bitch, Special, Break Up Twice. Kind of in that middle of the record. Special is a decent track, I thought, for the title track. I like it when she goes into more of the slower stuff and more of like your neo-pop style. I think she can... I like that sound for her more than some of the poppier tunes. I think her voice suits it better and everything in the production of those tracks. I think they're a little bit more mature, a little bit better. Some of the other things I thought can fall flat, like example, Girls, I really... That was all right of a track, but it's nothing special.
Yeah. My favorite parts of the album are when she sort of just shows like friend love throughout the entire thing. Like, I love you, bitch, kind of sounds like one of those. And then there's Birthday Girl kind of near the end, where it's kind of just like big sort of like passionate, just sort of like, I like my friends. I'm kind of like happy for them in like that kind of way, that kind of thing. Like, you don't get that too much in like modern pop music. It's always sort of like a relationship context or like kind of looking into oneself.
Usually, yeah.
But yeah, I feel like that in itself is like a powerful statement as well for like support systems, groups, all that kind of like different things that are through there. So that was something that I caught, at least being some of the album's more powerful moments, at least like what I saw.
For sure, yeah. I like that from Lizzo. I think it's nice to get that sound where it's not, everything is not just about fucking relationships over and over and over and over again, because that's what we've been getting the majority of pop throughout the history of music. And then since the 5+ years that we've been doing this podcast, we've been getting that a ton. And that's one of our big issues and complaints with pop music. With that's a nice thing with this record. You really don't get that. You get little things here or there naturally.
Like, Lizzo is a pop artist, but this doesn't feel like a, we've reviewed a lot of like, oh shit, here we go again, kind of like pop records where you can almost tell by the reviewer just like slogging through it. But no, there's really like a lot. There's really some like juicy stuff here.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of decent stuff with the production. As I was joking earlier with the sampling and stuff there, she used a lot of different beats and recycled things from different artists throughout decades of music. It actually fits within this record. As much as some people are like complaining about it online or other things that I've heard, I like all of them except for Coldplay, more on that later. But within the context of the record, Lizzo makes it her own. You know, she can do a lot with those sounds, but then, you know, take some of those calling back stuff, which we've been getting a lot in pop naturally. I mean, Meg Thee Stallion had plenty of tracks that on her last record that she used samples for and stuff that just recycled things, but she made them her own. Lizzo did the same thing here, but in a pop music context, and it actually hits. Because some of the things I've heard in pop where they've done recycled things is a lot of like recycled 80s beats, a lot of recycled stuff from that era, and it just got overused, overdone over and over again a lot. But this, it's just not even taking from one specific era. It's from a bunch of different things, but then in the context of the record, it still fits because it still is cohesive. It still runs through and it sounds good throughout it because she takes some of those things and then makes it her own in that way. So I actually thought that those were done very well, except the last song, but I'll get to that.
I mean, let's just, we're building up to it. I mean, I'll talk about some of the samples really fast, kind of just to get
Go ahead.
But About Damn Time has Hey DJ from the world famous Supreme Team. Girls has Beastie Boys, like you were saying, really classic one. Break Up Twice features Doo-Wop by Miss Lauryn Hill. Birthday Girl samples Summer Madness by Kool and the Gang. And then we get to Coldplay, which, and in addition to sampling the song Sudden Death by Quell Chris and Chris Keys, also samples the song Yellow by a band called Coldplay. It was so freeing to know that we made it, to know that I never ever will be alone. All we had was time, and at the front of my mind, I was so close to leaving the world behind with you. Ooh-hoo. And I just know. Which, for Audio Face longtime listeners know, we have a very storied relationship with. Actually, one of our top, like, engaged with music, like, sort of, like, bonus episodes that we do where we, like, focus on a musician and their history is the Coldplay episode. Because our kind of, like, what happened to Coldplay take that, Sean, you led that episode, is a really great one that a lot of people really resonated with, was that Coldplay, long story short, went through a phase of their own where they were really groundbreaking alternative rock acts and then just increasingly sold out more and more as they played more and more arena shows. You can almost see like a direct trajectory of how that happened. And so I'm really curious what your thoughts are from here on that song for sure.
So the song itself is okay. I hate high-pitched samples. When you change something and do a TikTok voice with it, it is the worst thing in the world. I absolutely just no more ever again, like done. If I hear that one more time, I'm going to go insane. But especially with Yellow, it's such a sad song and everything in there. And with the with how it's made into the song, like how it's sampled, it just doesn't fit. It's really awkward, and just and that high pitched sample just makes it even worse. It was actually like Chris Martin's voice maybe would have been better, but with it like that done that way, it just throws it off completely. And I have a lot of issues with songs that do that. Even like the 1975, one of my favorite bands, they did that on their last record. Like Tonight I Wish I Was Your Boy, the beginning where it did Running Away With Me, super high pitched. Hate that sample. Love the track. Once I just have to skip about 35 seconds into it and then listen to it. It's almost like this with Coldplay, the track, because the song's actually fine, and the other sample I enjoy on here, but with that it just keeps detracting because it keeps going throughout the track over and over again. I'm like, just stop it. It doesn't need to be there. Producers, stop that shit. If someone says, ooh, I want a sample and like change it up, make it a TikTok voice, just, you know, walk out. Either walk out or just look at them and say no.
But yeah. N-O, a lot of times it's like the producers of the record labels who are like, and saying like, hey, find a TikTokable moment for this song. Or do something like that. I don't think it necessarily has to be done in that way for sure. There are certain implementations that are better than not. But I really do think the song is like not too bad. I think, yeah, if you have a Coldplay head, you'll kind of like notice those things. They'll be very unsettling, which makes, of all the sample choices in here, definitely that one the most peculiar, let's say.
Yeah, most peculiar. I really don't like how the, and that's samples in general. It's more of a rant of samples that do that and production crews and artists that do that stuff. So, and honestly, that almost ruined it for me. But overall, I actually enjoyed the record a lot. I want to give it another listen at some point when I have time. Because there's a lot to dive into it with some of the other things where there's even other samples, other sounds that I haven't necessarily heard that when I was kind of skipping through it right now, when we were talking about it, I was like, oh, I didn't even notice this with the first listen through. So,
and what for artists like Lizzo. Sorry, go on. Finish your thought.
I'm sorry, but for artists like Lizzo who gets a lot of unnecessary hate, I think it's actually a very strong second record. You know, we have the curse of the second record for artists. So trying to figure out who they are, right? Of who am I going to be? What is my thing? Like, you know, her big successful track, Truth Hurts, you know, this trap queen style song, everything, unapologetically being herself. What, okay, is it just going to be that over again? Is it going to be more of those types of tracks? And no, it's not. It's a lot of neopop, a lot of soul. It's a lot of normal pop music, a lot of different stuff in here. But you could still tell that it's a Lizzo record through and through. So I think that's actually done very well.
I agree with that. I agree with that. Bringing that back.
I agree. I forgot about that.
That's the thing I was going to ask about is what were the political like things that you like stuck out to you?
Some of the stuff of like Everybody's Gay. I think that was the track where I heard some things of being political within like a social justice kind of way. And there's a couple other things throughout the album where you heard little things. It wasn't like crazy political stuff necessarily. It wasn't No Name or anything like that. But there's some stuff in there. I can't think off the top of my head, but I'm listening to it. Like, Everybody's Gay. And then there's another track towards the beginning, maybe To Be Loved, where I was listening to it. I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting for some of like people wanted to be who they are at the end of the day.
Yeah, and, I think it's a subtle kind of political message that we really like on Audio Face, where like it blends into the subject matter of the song. It doesn't feel like you're reaching that much really from like what the artist is really talking about. And Lizzo could go in like a number of different ways. Like I feel like she could be like decently qualified to go like in some of like the No-Name roots of things, right? But she's really kind of talking about love as a political act. And I think that's kind of in friendships and support systems, but that's also in like songs like Everybody's Gay relating to sexuality, of course. I mean, like the lyrics are definitely a tell there. But yeah, no, I think it's a solid second record overall. I kind of just realized that this is a second record full episode. Every
Shit,
artist
is,
here. Yeah, every artist here
that's is. I didn't realize that this is Steve Lacy's second record too.
Yeah, I had to double check, but anyways, very good. We'll get to Steve Lacy in a moment, but let's wrap this up with the arbitrary scale, which we do every week on Audio Face because our review is our review. We just told you how we think about it, and if we reduced it to a ranking system with letters or numbers, that would defeat the sanctity of the podcast. I don't know why I went with that turn of phrase. I think it's an old school turn of phrase. Anyways, this week it's going to be, speaking of old school, old YouTube memes, because I need a brain break from everything terrible happening. This is going to be... I'm going to give this... Don't tase me, bro.
No. Don't tase me, bro. I forgot about that. This is Charlie bit my finger.
That's...
I forgot that was a thing.
That's a great one.
Charlie bit my finger. So, Sega record of the day. Serving it up Gary's way, as always. We have Gemini Writes by Steve Lacy. 10 songs, 35 minutes long. Steve Lacy has had a... it's been around for quite some time, but this is only his second full-length LP that I know of, because he released one in 2018, 2019.
Yeah, Steve Lacy of the Internet, that R&B group that was like a kind of a major offshoot thing. They were kind of... the Internet were kind of the pioneers of my Funk Is Back take. Whenever I would mention that back then, I would kind of like think to the success of the Internet and even breakout successes from folks like Sid and Steve Lacy, 070 Shake, for example. And I was like, okay, no, there's something in the sauce here. But so...
For sure.
Yeah, see, this is still, though, the curse. I feel like I want getting a soundboard with that drop anytime we review like a second album. And this is an instance where you have an artist who has... He had a phenomenal first record, and now they just have to break out of that and do a second record that still has that emotion and sound and depth and establishes what they sound like as an artist while still doing something different, doing something new, and managing not to misstep. It's very hard to do, but I think Steve Lacy did a very, very good job here. I just want to start and begin by saying Static is one of my favorite intros to an album this year.
Thank you. Would you be my girlfriend, baby? Ooh, whoa, 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 whoa. Something turned me off. Smoking made me cause I'm longing for something secure.
The lyrics in the beginning are phenomenal. I need to get them up because it's like, it hits just so great. Baby, you got something in your nose. Sniffing that K, do you feel the hole? Hope you find peace for yourself. New boyfriend ain't gonna fill the void. Do you really even like this track? Take away the drugs, but you feel the noise. More and more you try to run away. You fuck your young self, do you feel the toy? All over this very silky, thumping bass. It's my favorite shit. Like, I don't even know if you know this about me, Sean. My favorite, like, my actual favorite Gorilla song. I know that, like, topic rotates, like, every 5 or 6, like, weeks. But it's an unfinished demo that has, like, a bass drop a lot like this in the background. And it is... I just love that music when you just have the bass just like ripple and like... I will also say this was one of the harder songs I had to review because I had to change so many things about my sound setup to make sure I heard this right. Because I was in my car and the bass was like rattling bass. It was beautiful, but I had some stuff in my trunk that was like rattling the speakers. So I literally had to pull over and move shit in my trunk. So I was like, I need to hear this shit right, goddammit. It's a very, 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 very good song. And a very, very good intro, yeah.
And ironically, for me, what I love that intro. I thought it was fantastic. What got me even more in this damn album was the second track, was Helmet. Just a perfect track to get you into the record after Static. Static, you're just like left with so many different feelings. That bass line is beautiful. And that helmet just gets you just this beautiful, beautiful, like, neopop, soul, alternative, just all of the things that we love here on Audioface into one track, and just love it. I have listened to this track a lot the past 48 hours or so. Yeah. And yeah, absolutely love it. It's everything that I like in a track, and especially for the placement of it, it is perfect. And that's one thing that I will give Steve Lacy a lot of credit for, is the way the album plays through. Is just every song there, even the little interlude in that middle of the record, you know, me and my fucking interludes that I don't like, I actually like it in this context.
Yeah.
Everything flows through this record perfectly. There isn't one song I'd want to switch. There isn't anything that I'd want to change within the order of it. And it just, it runs through an album like an album should.
But it is 35 minutes long. And when we used to do like this harder characterization between, like, or we used to police it harder between drop and an album, I mean, I think I may have said this before, but I'll reiterate it again. For your second album, short is probably better, because I feel like artists, like we've talked, when you have a bloated second album that's way too many ideas, it can really it can blur out what you're really trying to focus on.
There are very few artists, I'm trying to think of second albums that I like a lot that are longer. I think like the 1975 is one of the few artists who their second album is incredible, but it's actually really long. Fleet Foxes' Helpless Blues is 50 minutes long. Usually around that, like under an hour mark or so is good. But for a lot of artists, I think around that 40 minute, 45, 35, depending how it plays through, is good. The thing with Gemini Rites is that the tracks are slower, so it slows down the record in general, and it's the way it's played through. So it feels like it's longer, even though it's short.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's saying that like everything it plays through nice and slow and controlled throughout the record. So you're not left wanting more. You're not left thinking, oh shit, it's only 35 minutes. You're left at the end of it, you know, you get to give you the world, and you're like, damn, that's a good record. Like, whew, man, shit, that is good. I don't want to touch anything in there. That is exactly what you want to do. But there are other records where you get that bloated feeling or whatnot, or even records that are longer, but they could still play through just as well. It's all depending on the pacing of it. But since, you know, it's that more of that slower soul style, slower neuro pop in here, it needs to be shorter like this. And it's done. Example, Buttons, Bad Habit in the middle of the record, they're both like that slower. Some still have a little bit, they could be up tempo, but they're slow. Like Bad Habit, fantastic track in there, but it takes a while to get through it. So that's just how it is.
Yeah. As you get through the rest of the record, you get to Together interlude, which I think really helps to break up the record and pacing a little bit. I do feel that if I have maybe one complaint about this record, is that near the end, I wouldn't change it, and it's not filler, but I do feel like it doesn't quite level up to what you get in the beginning. So I want to say it's a little bit of a top-heavy record. But the way you end, like, I love how it ends so much, because you have, so like the last four songs, essentially, Cody Freestyle is almost like a reprise of Static, where you have this like really deep thumping bassy thing in the back. Really, it's the instrumentation that kind of carries that through. Amber is a nice song, but that's where I think you get a little bit of like a weaker point here. I think it's a good song, but I'm glad that it's something to separate between that and Sunshine, which I really think is a great track. Shout out to
Shout out Foshé. Sunshine's fantastic. I love that track.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good second to last track on an album, which I said the same thing about Fouché's collaboration with Vince Staples on the self-titled project, because that was like the second to last real song on the album, really. I think there's like an interlude or so in between that, but you had that, and it really just brought the record to a very emotionally vulnerable place in a stage. And this is a very similar case where essentially Fushi, and then there's like Matt Martians with the interlude, but like Fushi is the only feature on this. And so it really adds a lot of depth. It really adds a lot of emotion and makes the song, like the little animation on Spotify is like them sort of like free flowing with these suspended animation like wires that you use in movies all the time. And it gives that track that kind of free-flowing feeling, which you don't get from the rest of the album. Not that that's the bad thing, but it's just giving you more range, which is, again, amazing to accomplish in a 35-minute record that is 10 songs long, and it's your second album. Like, Jesus Christ. It's not... It's Steve Lacy's...
Yeah.
I was
going to
say,
there's Steve so Lacy's many sounds in
on,
here.
Steve Lacy's worked on a number of different projects before with the internet and et cetera, so it's hard to say, like, it's his second record, but it's your named second record with your name on it. There's a lot riding on that, and murdered it. Like, incredible. Very good.
Yeah, fantastic. I really, really like it. I'm going to keep listening to this throughout the year and, you know, past it, too. This is one of those audio face records where I'm like, damn, I'm glad we get to do this podcast to talk about it. We need to make a new category for the awards show of the Dan is Right tour of Funk is Back. Something like, we got to do something like that.
I mean, like, I was saying in an episode or two ago that I am starting to hit the point where I'm getting sick of, like, you know, the funk resurgence. But I think that's because people are just like, okay, I'm gonna make a funk throwback track and throw in some synths here or there and call it a day. This Steve Lacy made me feel things. Steve Lacy makes me feel things. It is a
and that's not supposed to be.
Yeah. It is such a it's the pinnacle of music, especially the pinnacle of funk music, because funk music is also meant to elicit a, like, physical movement and groove and response, also used in other contexts, but, like, it's supposed to have that. And Steve Lacy is truly carrying that forward. Again, he was one of the pioneers with the whole Funk is Back thing before, and he is doing kind of like a Toro y Moi role, so to speak, or even a... Who's your boy? That one, Jai Paul. Where, like, an entire genre is chasing them, and they keep going, okay, now the genre's me, I'm going to do something different. Okay, now the genre's caught up to me, I'm going to do something different. Like, they're truly, like, the trailblazers of their own respective genres and movements, and Steve Lacy can count himself as one of those.
For sure, because I think there's going to be people that hear this record and get inspired by it and try to make something that can live up to it, you know. I think that's actually a really good comparison, like a Jai Paul, where Jai Paul completely makes a new sound and everybody try to fucking copy it for a decade and still no one could make it. And he's only made like two tracks since, and he's like, and those two tracks are like unbelievably good. And he's like, I still got it.
Yeah.
Steve Lacy can add his name to that list too, for sure.
Arbitrary scale. Because our view is our view. We're not going to belittle it by giving it some ranking system or anything like that. Nope. We're just going to rank it by something completely arbitrary, which are classic YouTube memes. I'm giving this one the Rickroll.
Rickroll? That's a good one. I'm giving this my favorite one, the Leroy Jenkins.
Woo!
Leroy Jenkins. Yes. Because I have been that guy many times.
I think I've played with you and you've been that guy.
You definitely have. In like TF2, everybody's like, hold up. And I'm just like...
I would take a week off work if they just remastered Bad Company 2. Like, right. Not the Battlefield 5 thing where they just totally messed it up, but like, or whatever this new one game.
Until 2042.
Just like, yeah, Battlefield 2042. Just like, please just give me the... Just make Bad Company 3. Just...
Make Bad Company 3. More dust.
Dice should listen to Audio Face. And for their next album, just, you know, be a little bit unambitious. Just like focus in a little bit more. Don't be too crazy over here. And give me 256 players and helicopters, please.
All I'm saying is Bad Company 2 is one of the very few video games where, like, in a scenario, I was actually, like, legitimately terrified. When I was, like, stuck in a base in the desert map and I had, like, three helicopters trying to find me, and I was like, this is horrifying. God damn, it's that game.
Dice was on a run at that point in my childhood. And, yeah, anyways.
And still, then, yeah, Battlefield 3 was good, and then since then, tits up.
Yeah. Oh, well.
All right.
Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about Battlefield in the members portion.
Also, so speaking of Gorillaz tracks, by the way, in the members portion, I want you to guess my favorite Gorillaz track. I'll give you three guesses at the members portion, because I would be surprised if you guessed it right.
I mean, like, this is, I would be surprised with three guesses because it's so impossible, but we will try that game. Become a member. Join syndicate23.co for more. Yeah, let's see the last album.
Yeah, last album. It's Beatopia by B2B. It is 14 songs, 45 minutes long. Serving it up Gary's way, as always, on this podcast.
With a mispronunciation at some point.
Always, always, especially with B2B. You know, I could never say anything right with her.
And, and this is like one of your favorite artists that you brought onto Audioface to kind of like spotlight. And you led a Biba Doobie bonus episode that we did that's available for members. We went into how she went from like kind of unknown to blowing up on TikTok and like through a remix and then still making music that is like, okay, I'm not going to try to make TikTok hits. I'm still going to try to push my own sound forward. Yeah. And we've been talking very recently about how a lot of women in indie are doing this sort of grunge callback sound from the 90s that Biba Doobie did in her debut album, Fake It Flowers, that we were
doing. I wouldn't say she necessarily started it, but her record is like, really, when she
didn't invent it, she perfected it.
Yeah, that's actually a very, very good way of saying it. Jaipal of her era. but with her second record, you know, the second record curse, as we like to say,
the curse.
She actually tries to expand a little bit of her sound within it. It is still, and that's going to be my one critique of her is I'm left still wanting more because it's still, you still have that 90s throwback sound. You still have a lot of those influences. It's not nearly as grunge heavy as before because she actually branches out and tries to do different sounds within like 90s theme-ish-esque, you know, with like 90s R&B, 90s even some hip-hop alternative, and then even early aughts alternative, early aughts pop records and stuff. So you can hear those influences and everything. So I was joking to myself, I'm like, okay, what else is she, oh, I guess she, all right, she's got the grunge, now is she going to make like Kid A, and then is she going to make Amnesiac, and then is she going to make Hail the Thief?
Yeah, like if she's going through the tens here, like at what point is her Coldplay era, at what point is her like Muse era? All these things I'm joking about, but all these things I'm sure would be pretty cool. Like if we got like a little like EP here or there, I'd be very down.
I mean, I'm telling you, if she makes like a Strawberry Swing style Coldplay song, I would like fucking be all over it. Because the thing with B2B and something that I don't think a lot of artists are chasing but can't do is trying to make a throwback sound stay fresh. That is an issue with grunge because you're very limited in the way that it sounds. But with a lot of the ideas, because 90s isn't just grunge. There's a shit ton of sounds in the 90s. You have, you know, your Spice Girls. You have a lot of hip-hop. You have R&B. You have, you know, the emergence of alternative rock. You have the emergence of electronics coming in. You have EDM starting up. You have a lot of different sounds in there and into the early aughts that you can play around with. And she starts to do in here. So example, the first two tracks, so the cult song and whatnot at the beginning is okay, but then 1036 is the only real like certified grunge hit and stuff where you hear that, and I was like, all right, it's. Classic B2B, but it's, you know, nothing too crazy, but still it also starts to play off with some of like early aughts, like No Doubt sounds and everything that I don't mind. And I was like, okay, so she's branching out, trying different stuff. But like around like See You Soon, Ripples, the fourth and fifth tracks, that's where she gets this interesting dreamy sound that she goes throughout the record trying to do of her. It's like being a trippy-ish sound of making this nice shoegazy-ish sound that I think it suits her vocals, and especially with the vocal effects that she has on here. I really like the way that's done, and you feel like you're just floating it down. I'll have to look if that's what her intended effect was, but it sounds like you're like stuck in a river or you're floating or something like that.
Like a trance of some kind.
Yeah, a trance. I think that's good. Or even a dream. But within there, like towards the middle of the record, you get like these nice, almost like R&B sounding-ish tracks, which I was like, well, this is interesting. R&B mixed with alternative. Like, example, The Perfect Pair.
Yes.
The Six Song. I was like...
A little Bieber Doobie Bossa Nova.
I know, right? Exactly. I heard that and I was like, oh my God, yes, this is what I wanted. I wanted her to explore more. And this is what we get. We get these nice little things that she's having fun. But it's the thing too that's impressive is it still sounds good within this record. It still has that dreamiest sound and whatnot with it, where you're maybe you're having a dream or you're in Argentina or Brazil or something, and you just got these nice Bossa Nova beats. And then you have like Broken CD right after it, of which is even more airy and stuff, and almost a lot of ambient sounds in there, which I like.
And so. Also, like, what a like zeitgeisty late 90s, early 2000s song of like Broken CD, because there's a lot of motifs in there about like things being on repeat and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And
I lived through that era.
Yeah, I remember having my CD player and like breaking a bunch of shit because I did not understand, and of course, what kid would, that running with a CD player is not a good idea.
So I used to have these clear plastic CD protectors that had like a little orange seal on them, and you'd clip them onto your CD to try to see if that would scratch the paper instead of scratching the CD, so you wouldn't get stuck repeating a song and everything. This shit never worked in my yellow Walkman, but you know, we had to try back in the day.
Yeah, that sounds like one of the ultimate sounds good, doesn't work of the era.
Exactly. That's about, tell me you're a 90s baby without telling me you're a 90s baby right there.
Absolutely. But before we get too much into deep nostalgia of that, but you do get what... So we were coming into this record going, okay, Bieber Doobie, you've kind of pioneered this grungy sound. A lot of other artists are copying it. Few are really kind of being able to transcend from it. I would definitely give a shout out to Wet Leg this year because they are like
for sure.
Phenomenal in indie. But
even Snail Mail too is another great artist as well.
Oh, for sure. Like we even recently talked about Men I Trust and a couple other indie artists that are really like giving us something that isn't just the same bedroom pop, but also isn't the same sort of like grunge indie callback type thing. We're getting some range here, which is great. But yeah, that's the thing, is that we wanted Bieber Doobie of all people to show us range, to show us something different. And she's managing to do both, where we are getting range once you get deeper into the meat and potatoes of the album, so to speak. But you're also getting, like you said, Sean, she's able to do these different things and different sounds and have fun with them, but it doesn't throw off the record at all. It doesn't throw off the flow of it. It's really nice.
Yeah. So, example, like right after Broken CD, you have Talk, which is more of like a grungiest sound. But, you know, it had been five tracks between your grungiest sounds, so it's fine. Love Song, Pictures of Us, or it's a little bit slower. And, nice little shoegazy sounds with some of that too, which I absolutely love. Then you get Fairy Song, which is this nice little like 90s pop song, which I like. But it reminds me a little bit of The Birthday Party by the 1975, of how it's done, of this nice blend between, you know, 20s sounding alt rock mixed with some throwback sounds. And I really liked Fairy Song. And this is telling me where, like, she's really branching out because she's trying to figure out where she wants to go within her own voice and everything, and her own sound. But she also knows that she already has a sound of being, she's only like 21 or something. but still trying to stay true to yourself as an artist while exploring that. And this is the perfect blend of it, because you still get, you know, some of your sounds that your Gen Zs will love and everything, but then you get a lot of stuff that us reviewers and people who are fans of her work and fans of her music want as well, of just branching out. So overall, I think it's a fantastic record, a fantastic second record. I was very worried going in because some of the singles I heard and stuff, I was like,
yeah,
I'm like, please don't give me 45 minutes of just grunge, and it's not.
Yeah, I like See You Soon in the context of the record very much. And I also do like, it's almost Biba Doobie taking a little bit of take from Trap almost, where you put your like crowd pleasers like in the beginning of the album. You're like, okay, we know what you're here for. Let's just like offload this.
Yeah.
And then where most trap artists fail is they just like, okay, let's just more of that shit. Let's just keep doing more of that for like 25 songs more. Pump up those numbers. Those are rookie numbers. Culture 5, 80 songs long. The end of Audio Face. But no, instead of that, you get a thoughtful project where you get range and variety and depth. And I wouldn't say this is like the perfect album construction per se. There's some things that maybe like could be moved around, or could be, you know, like turned into an EP, so to speak. But really, like for a 45-minute project in 2022, I felt like it used maybe 40 of that minutes pretty perfectly.
Yeah. And like, last little thing of the actual record, the last track of You're Here, That's the Thing, I think is a great ender. Because it's not sounding like the rest of the record per se, because it sounds like this is her really just making a song and not having any influences, not having any other sounds in mind, of just I'm going to create something. And it's a beautiful ending track of it, of like, wow, okay, she can do a lot. There's still a unlimited ceiling of what she can create now. So I mean, it leaves me very excited for what else we're going to get. So yeah, damn good for a second record for an artist who's very young and, you know, has the blessing and the curses of blowing up on a song that she was featured on and having all these different pressures on her now, and she still knocks out of the park. It's very good.
Yeah. Biba Doobie can barely do any wrong. And another one albums like this, and she's going to be like one of those just like indie giants of like, she just like owns 100%. The genre. Yeah.
100%.
Arbitrary Scale this week. I definitely need to remember that quick one because it was like really good, whatever I came up with off my head. But like, old YouTube memes. I'm going to give this the old Chocolate Rain.
God damn it.
It's a good one, though.
I should have said it before. I was going to say it's going to be a young Chocolate Rain because it's us moving away from the microphone like that.
Some stay dry and others feel the pain. Chocolate Rain. It's like making sure you don't breathe into the mic, which is, you know, there's all kinds of like mic etiquette and radio etiquette that we just totally blow through for better or worse on this podcast. But 100%.
Hence my keyboard next to my mic. I'm like, I don't give a fuck, my podcast.
God damn it. Amazingly, it's not getting picked like nowhere near as much as before. I haven't heard your keyboard since we got the new mic.
It's because this damn Shure mic, dude. It's the best part. The mic is about 6 feet closer to the keyboard. I need to show you a picture. It's like on top of the keyboard.
Oh my god. In the members portion, we have a lot more antics based on, you know, computer accessory placement. And then we have Boosie Badass getting arrested in one of the funniest ways. I mean, not funny because, you know, it's a typical like over-policing in America, et cetera, et cetera. But Boosie Badass, who I don't agree with on many things, just somehow manages to make this like a gay old time, let's say.
Beautiful.
And then we have some Audio Face classics here, a couple of new stories, and I'm going to have to try to guess your favorite gorilla song. So more for that from members.
It's been that way. It's one of the few things that has not changed in my musical taste. I'll say that much.
Interesting. Okay. That does give me a hint, because that makes it me believe it's a classic. And so we'll find out later. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. Sean,
your
play
part,
us out.
You decide.
Play us out.
What does it mean to play us out? Thank you for
what does that mean? To play us out? To end the show? You have to drop it every once in a while, just so these youngins remember.
There's no words there. I can't read.
Sorry, super last thing. I know we're ending, but I had to drop after Mohammed bin Salman and Joe Biden did the fist bump thing, which I was a candidate for arbitrary scale. I decided not to do that.
I wish you did it as a scale because you know what. Hold on, we wait for the members' portion for what I'm about to say. So keep going,
Lord, please. But what? God damn, I actually forgot where my train of thought was with that, which tends to happen. Just not focusing on so many shit. But yeah, maybe I'll figure it out in the members portion. Anyways, oh no, yeah. So because of that thing happening, I decided to bring back the clip of the Fox News host talking about Obama fist pumping Michelle Obama. And it begins by going, a fist pound, a fist bump, or maybe even a terrorist fist jab?
I will never forget that. I'm like,
back when Fox just had the bangers, like they did not care what they were putting on air. They were like, yo, anyone under the age of 35 is going to like never forget what we're about to do. We're like, yeah, no shame. Run it. This is Roger Ailes era, baby. We don't care.
Roger Ailes era Fox News. It hits differently. More ways than one.
Raw hamburger meat. What does it mean to play us out? I'm so sorry. That's so unfair for me to just like drop that on you and then run.
You can find us at Audio Face Pod. I don't want to be found on anything.
Get them Beyond Patties, man.
Get that Beyond Roast Beef.
This is an Audio Face. Please send any and all complaints to SW Suarez on Twitter and Instagram. Send all music requests to AudioFacePod on Twitter and Instagram. I can be found at Dan from the Web on Twitter, Dan from the Internet on Instagram, Dan from the Internet on Twitch, and Dan from the Web. Fuck. Dan from the Internet on TikTok and Dan from the Web on Twitch. Real blurry hours with Sean over here, but it's fine because we're about to end the show. Thank you, members. Fun. Join the syndicate23.co. Cheers.
Jesus, bye.